cold, sweaty, from the ice chest at the Mojave Desert last stop filling station.
She said, boy.
I like them.
Okay, this is Rad Radio on Enemy Combatant Radio, DJ Rubble, and I'm here with two guests from the organization Radical Women, right here in the Mission. We're broadcasting out of the San Francisco Bay Independent Media Center. I've got Tony Mendocino and Nancy Reiko Kato, and we're going to be discussing the current situation in Iraq with the war. We're going to talk about women's resistance in Iraq and what people in the United States can do both to work in solidarity with the women in Iraq and take the anti-war movement in a more militant direction. We're working up to International Day of Protests on March 19th. So let's start off with Tony. Why don't you talk about where things are now as far as the war in Iraq is going, and just a current assessment of what's going on there and what's going on with our military.
Sure. Thanks for having us on the show. We're glad to be here. And I think reading the headlines of the mainstream media, you see that the war on Iraq, as we are coming into March 2005, nearly 2 years after the original invasion and occupation, the war is basically a disaster from many different viewpoints. There's recently topped 1,500 U.S. military troops killed, and the effect in the country right now is one of devastation. The insurgency and resistance movement in Iraq is continuing to gain ground, but they're often forced to use means of from suicide bombings to explosions to try and, you know, raise the resistance against the U.S. occupation. And I think that also the war is being increasingly criticized in the United States. The January 30th election was widely seen as something that was meant to put kind of a sham stamp of democracy on the whole situation there. And I think that it one thing we want to address today is the effect of the war on women, who are often the ones hardest hit by military actions like the one we're seeing right now. And the fact that there women in Iraq are battling rising fundamentalism as well as the deadly effects of the United States bombs and bullets. So that's just an overview.
How does the rising fundamentalism have to do with the war? Does it actually have to do with forces around this war, or is that something that women have been battling independent of this war?
It's definitely tied to the war in that under Saddam Hussein, there was not obviously, there were many problems, but at the same time, there wasn't a targeted attack on women's rights and on Iraqi women in particular. They enjoyed many rights which mostly were damaged because of the effects of the sanctions that the United States government had imposed for over a decade before our government actually attacked the country. So I'm getting at the fact that the right-wing fundamentalists that are now both, you know, poised to be in the governing council of the country, as well as the ones that are wreaking their own form of action in the streets by actually assassinating feminists and activists and kidnapping them and basically using the threat of Islamic fundamentalism to take away many, many important gains that Iraqi women did have, and including things like paid maternity leave and the right to work. And now they're facing all sorts of repression. And again, it's ironic that the U.S. government is touting, themselves as going in to establish democracy in liberation for Iraqi people, because the Iraqi women are actually facing basically enslavement in many ways, and there, and it's something that we're trying to emphasize how urgent the situation is. There's also another aspect that isn't being talked about, which is the women prisoners and political prisoners from Abu Ghraib, but also in many other prisons that have been raped and who are being, you know, threatened in other ways, prisoners. But the issue is that when once someone has been raped under the Shahira law, they're often threatened with death when they do ever try and go back to their families, because it's seen as an honor killing. So we're seeing this type of violence happening more and more.
Also, too, I think we have to look at how under Saddam's regime, there was more equality, as Tony said, because there was a need for women to be in the workforce. Well, today, you know, Iraqis can't even get any work. There's, I believe, 70% unemployment. So there's what few Iraqis do find jobs. It's pretty much going to be the men. So they're making women, you know, disposable second class, well, worse than second class citizens. And I think that what we're looking at as well is, look what's happening in Afghanistan. Afghanistan totally dropped off the map, right? I mean, this is, you know, we're still in Afghanistan. You never hear about it. But, you know, the plight of women in particular in Afghanistan, you know, has really, you know, gone downhill. It's gotten tremendously worse.
You might talk about that. It seems like women are extremely sensitive to fluctuations in the economy. And over the past 20 years before the war, the economy was building up. I was surprised when I saw some film clips of Iraq, how modern that society was. And so women's economic position had increased as the economy increased, more women to fill positions in the workforce. And so what you seem to be saying is, as soon as these conditions start to plummet, they're plummeting, of course, because the United States is destroying the whole infrastructure, that women are it sounds like last in, first out.
Exactly. That's totally it. And interestingly enough, you know, our so-called ally of the United States government, Saudi Arabia, women have less rights there than they had in Iraq. You know, in Iraq, women could drive. They, you know, held professional careers. They could vote. You know, they were highly educated. Actually, education was guaranteed, or you were guaranteed a job if you went to college after you graduated from college, because, again, based on the economic need to fill jobs.
Yeah, I mean, Saudi Arabia is so bad, I think women get murdered for things like adultery. So it certainly hasn't been a model.
Right, and then you have the double
anyone
standard.
Anyone would want to follow.
Right, yeah. You have a double standard where the men, you know, can be polygamous. They can go and have, you know, take child brides. They could, you know, basically do whatever they want. But again, if you're a woman and try and do anything of the same, forget it.
Yeah, the men do lose their reputations for stuff like that, but no reprisals where women actually get put to death. So, yeah, I guess what you're talking about is really completely false news that comes out of those countries, that the United States tries to use the fact that they're helping women when obviously they don't care what's happening to women in those countries. It's just which countries are on their side economically or militarily. Have you heard anything recently about military actions itself, you know, themselves directly, and what's going on with the bombings and the infrastructure?
Well, I've only heard, you know, from, like I said, that there's been, you know, some of the deadliest suicide bombings and other attempts at the resistance to get the troops out in Iraq in the recent months, but I don't have a lot more details, so.
Okay, I don't have any on that front either. I know I've been hearing lately that there are a lot of U.S. troops deserting, fleeing the military. I don't have numbers, but more and more are just taking off. You hear in the press of a few individuals here and there that, who just refuse to go back, but others who are just taking off. And last month, I read something in the Ireland Independent Media Center that peace activists over there were encouraging military people to stay in Ireland for refuge. Apparently, the flights back and forth stop over in Ireland. So I don't know if you've heard any stories about that, but the situation is so bad for the U.S. military that it's hard to see how this thing could go on, even if there were any legitimate reasons to have it go on.
Yeah, it's getting more and more of a dangerous situation for the working class, mostly military troops that are over there, because they don't want to be there, or if they do, they're seeing the fact that the U.S. government isn't even supporting them, despite the, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that's been authorized on this war. The soldiers are actually the ones that are under-equipped. You know, I'm just saying, even from that viewpoint, it's seen as a nightmare, and I think that the thing we're trying to encourage with building the anti-war movement in the United States is also saying bring the troops home immediately, and that's one of the demands we're trying to raise. But as you said, there's rising rebellion happening in refuseniks, and that's a very, you know, that didn't happen in the Vietnam War for many years, so it's quite significant.
Okay, Radical Women has an event coming up, International Women's Day celebration. Solidarity with our Iraqi sisters. Celebrate the indomitable women of Iraq who are fighting the double jeopardy of U.S. occupation and escalating fundamentalism. Nancy Rako Kato, you'll be there. Also, there's a speaker, is it Huda Samir? From
yeah.
The Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq. Can you talk about the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq and what they're doing in their own country to resist the U.S. occupation?
Yeah, the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq is an incredibly important organization. It's a feminist, openly feminist organization. They're actively organizing in Baghdad. They have set up homeless shelters for women. They have helped with labor and employment rights. They have come out publicly against the election because of, you know, the fact that it was pretty much a sham election. They've done quite a lot of stuff. They've held public demonstrations on International Women's Day. They're having a conference in Baghdad on March 8th this coming, International Women's Day, and basically talking about how, you know, what's happening to women in Iraq. And I think that in Radical Women, we felt it was very important for us in all our branches throughout the United States, as well as in Melbourne, Australia, to take a stand and really publicize, you know, what is going on in Iraq, because these women are fighting back and we don't hear about it. I mean, you know, just as we don't hear about fight backs here, but I mean, it's really important that we know that, you know, that the Iraqi people are not just laying down and letting occupation happen. And so, we have taken on this issue as a way to also reinvigorate the anti-war movement here in the United States, because we feel it's very important for the anti-war movement to take a feminist analysis, talking about how women always are the hardest hit by any sort of war and violence, and that, you know, the sooner we get the U.S. out of Iraq, you know, the sooner they can start building a democratic society that, you know, is not based on a religious society at all, but really is democratically run and not, you know, trying to operate under the heavy hand of, you know, a brutal U.S. regime.
Okay. Radical Women is a socialist feminist organization. Talk a little bit about your organizing positions that have gotten you into solidarity with the Organization of Women's Freedom. In other words, a little bit about your politics and what would bring you about to picking this particular organization to do solidarity work and some cross-cultural public education in this event that's coming up mm-hmm. on March 12th.
Yeah, it's another reason why we're glad to be able to share some of the information today, because, as I said and Nancy mentioned, a lot of this news and active feminist resistance in Iraq isn't being publicized. So one of the reasons we are taking this solidarity position, it naturally goes, as you said, as socialist feminists. We're also internationalists, and we see the strong connection between war and a war for profit and oil, such as this war and occupation happening in the Middle East, as directly linked with our status here in the richest country in the world, and that the war is hurting both women abroad as well as us here at home. And we support the resistance in Iraq. We're trying to take that position and get it out as widely as possible, but specifically as feminists, to say that, as, again, shining a spotlight on what's happening and the backlashes against women's rights. And we're also fighting that here at home. We want to have a democratically run society in the interests of humanity, not big business in the United States and elsewhere. So, but we really see the heart of it, that it's our United States government who is causing this immediate repression in the country, and that we have both a obligation as and responsibility, as well as in our own interest, to fight the war and to point out how important it is that we build a movement against it that's capable both of getting the U.S. out of the area, but also eventually getting a system which we see as socialist, but it would also need to be feminist in order to really meet people's needs.
Does feminism get its place in anti-war organizing, or is radical women and the Freedom Socialist Party a little bit unique in that way?
We're unique. I think that we're unique in the sense of being an organization that combines feminism and socialism, but not unique in terms of people understanding the connection. So we're the kind of leadership organized body that does it, but it's like what's always been really exciting is people understand the connection. They understand the need to be international. They understand the need that capitalism is what's causing these wars throughout the world, and the misery and the horrible repression. And that the other thing is there's really more and more an openness to, I think, socialist ideas and socialist solutions. I think people are also critical because they don't want to have a socialism that's bureaucratic. They want a socialism that, you know, people do. It's what socialism should aspire to be, which is democratic, which is inclusive, which does meet the needs of the most oppressed, in this case, in today's society, be women, young people, and certainly in the United States, people of color, lesbian, gays, transgenders, and bisexuals, working people. Because if we don't do that, you know, we're not going to totally be free. We all, as activists, spend a lot of time trying to make the world a better place. But if we're just fighting for one part of ourselves, it's like that battle is never going to end. So we believe that if we get to the root cause, again, capitalism, then, you know, we can build a new base and build a new foundation where we really truly can prosper and lead fulfilling lives and reach our greatest human potential. I mean, it's... You know, I feel very optimistic, you know, in 2005 as a revolutionary, because there is a lot of interest and we're seeing a lot of people, again, you know, they're desperate for answers because they know how bad, you know, the situation is getting.
Okay. Saturday, March 19th, we have, that's the second anniversary of the bombing of Iraq. It seems a lot longer. Mm-hmm. The bombing has been a lot longer, but it seems a lot longer. It's been 2 years. I've got an announcement here from the International Action Center. The worldwide anti-war movement has called for massive demonstrations against the war. On the weekend of March 19th and 20th, 2005, the second anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. Up here, I have an announcement from New York City activists. They've been kept out of Central Park and a lot of the main locations perpetually for anti-war and other demonstrations. Demonstrations are basically outlawed or put in little pens if they negotiate or take an alternate routes or whatever. The announcement here says, a few months ago, Mayor Bloomberg, the NYPD, and Bush told us that we could not march to and rally in Central Park. We do not accept this decision and are determined to challenge it by assembling tens of thousands of people to retake Central Park. So one of the actions in New York is that this time around, the last few big demonstrations, apparently activists negotiated and came up with an alternate plan where they can do their demonstration without getting trounced, but they didn't do it where they want it. They're going in Central Park. What's the route here for March 19th demonstrations? Good, you've got the flyer over there.
The route is meeting at Dolores Park in San Francisco at 18th and Dolores Streets, as you said, on the March 19th at 11, and there'll be a rally there. The march route, I'm not sure of the exact route, going to end up, though, at the Civic Center at noon with a rally and information tabling and speakers. So it goes from Dolores Park to Civic Center. And I did want to add that certainly what happened in New York, the Republican National Convention, was a recent example where, as you said, Fred, the activists were basically penned in and prevented from exercising, you know, the most basic right to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And one of our branches in New York City of Radical Women was actively involved in many of the demonstrations there. And there was a problem, I think, that we're seeing with the anti-war movement of needing to step up the militancy and for a leadership that will be willing to put out a call for people to, you know, basically reclaim our rights, because we're facing not only the Patriot Act and repression of civil liberties, but these types of attacks on our rights to demonstrate is a very ominous sign, and I think we really need to focus on that, and that a lot of the anti-war movement was derailed or steered into the recent presidential election, which Radical Women was actively opposed to. We believe we need to be in the streets. So we see March 19th as another way to try and galvanize the movement and build on it, because it's needed more than ever.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. We had an election, if you even want to call it that, two candidates, Kerry and Bush, and it seemed like the main thrust of this election to me was that the PR of this was going to be that this war is going on regardless of which party gets elected. The only thing that could be discussed is how the war goes on. And some people say that the election sort of delayed the militancy that's needed. It probably didn't make any difference from my point of view, one way or another. But what do people have to do now to get that message out? Because those messages are pretty powerful for people in the mainstream of society that aren't out there protesting, whereas the dissent is really squashed, but there's this assumption that, and then that somehow it's in the interest of the country to have it happen. How do we, you know, get more people engaged who aren't engaged?
You know, I was really excited about the anti-Bush inauguration demonstration that happened in January, and there was thousands of people out in the streets. I think it was a wet and cold day or evening. And 2 days later, there was the demonstration against the anti-abortionists who had the nerve to come and hold their Walk for Life in San Francisco. Radical Woman was one of the key leaders in a pro-choice coalition that organized a counter-protest and march and rally that basically sent a really strong message. We had as many people, if not more, than the anti-abortionists, you know, plus elected officials, you know, a wide diverse grouping of community activists to basically send the message. And that was, again, very empowering. So it's like people miss. I'm looking forward to the 19th, because I do believe people understand that, you know, every day things get worse and there is no end in sight unless we take matters into our own hand. I think that was clear. I remember standing on the steps of Sproul Plaza on the day that the bombing started in Iraq and, you know, saying we look to the UN to try and, you know, save us and prevent this from happening. We look to our legislatures, we look to whomever, but the bottom line was nobody was going to do it for us. So that left us to do it for ourselves. And that message, and I think that message still stands true today. And people are more and more having more confidence in being able to do it. So I think that the leadership of the anti-war movement can't underestimate at all where people are at. And I think there's been a sense of underestimation, a bit of cynicism, a bit of reformist kind of ideology to say, oh, well, we can just work within, you know, if we all, you know, rally around Kerry, he'll give us something. But it's like, no, the guy wasn't going to give us anything. In fact, he was backtracking on some of his more, you know, firmer positions, such as abortion rights and whatnot, and even the war, you know.
Well, yeah, he was getting worse. He said he was going to do it worse than Bush and promised. I think he also promised bigger tax cuts, too, which he could never pay for. But, I mean, he was getting really bad, saying that he would overthrow the governments of Cuba and Venezuela, that Bush was only getting tough with Cuba because it was an election year. So, yeah, he was going all over the place for some of the egregious abuses of the Bush administration and basically saying that we have to be tougher on these things when we get in them. But one thing you touched on that I'd like you to talk about as far as reformist politics, socialists and some of the other radicals were warning from the beginning how this war was going to go, because apparently wars go this way all the time. People rally around the president, rally around the issue or whatever, and then things start deteriorating over time. But talk about tactics for fighting the anti-war movement. I remember one prominent socialist organizer here was on KPFA radio and warning people to stop the approach that says, well, let's get the United Nations on our side before we go over and bomb them. What this organizer was saying is that if people demand that process, then the U.S. government will find a way to get the UN on the side and go out there and bomb anyway, so don't fall into that kind of a tactic. What would be more militant strategies for, you know, no war under any circumstances? Talk about a little bit of what, you know, what goes on when activists are taking different strategies, and what would be some more militant strategies than, you know, trying to coalesce and make a good war?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just start with it and Nancy can add. I think that's a great question because we are talking about strategies for one, both with building solidarity, but also, as you said, to up the militancy. I think certainly an area, there's a few ideas around exposing the war profiteers. Nancy and I were involved in when the war broke out and the wave of arrests and civil disobedience that happened in San Francisco and across the country. We chose to participate in an action at the Carlyle Group, one of the, you know, large financiers of the war and of arms. And I think making that connection is an important idea. And also with bringing the labor movement in on board and really helping to, what if we had a one-day general strike across the country? That's an idea that we could be promoting, both to say, to make the connection again, that working people are not benefiting from this war, both here in the U.S., but also who's being attacked in Iraq. And maybe Nancy has some other strategies. We're also going to be launching a petition campaign. I think in this period, we're also in an educational period as well as agitational, meaning we're trying to break through the mainstream media blackout of a lot of these issues and discussions. So,
okay, good. Nancy, why don't you comment, and then we'll wind down with some of the announcements that were coming up for this war event and for the Radical Women event this Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things we want to be doing at our International Women's Day celebration with Huda Samir from the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, is to be talking about strategies, right? Because Radical Woman has some ideas, but we need people involved. And now is the time to be getting involved if people aren't already involved, which I know many are. And part of it is to have the dialogue so we can figure out where can we come together? What stands can we be taking? What can we be doing? I think really tying this is an age-old question in any movement, is making the connection to what is the root cause of this war. You know, it's a government that basically is primarily interested in corporate profits at the expense of working people. You know, it's our tax dollars. So we're saying make the Halliburtons and the Bechtels basically give reparations to Iraq. You know, they're the ones making billions of dollars off of it and stealing billions, not even making the money because they're stealing it. You know, I think they should also, frankly, repay the U.S. Treasury for all the tax dollars money that have been spent on this war and they've been making profits for. We also demand that women, you know, be released from prison in Iraq, and that, you know, their safety be guaranteed, that they need to be able to have a secular government, you know, that's democratically elected and truly democratically elected, not some, you know, farce election that they had where, you know, only the fundamentalists could run. That's ridiculous. Those are just a few of the things. And again, there's other ideas, but I think we really have to step it up and make demands in our government and just say, we're not going to take it anymore. Because part of it is we'll say, okay, well, we're protesting, which is an important aspect, but we need results because people are dying, not just in Iraq, but in the streets of San Francisco.
Right. Okay, this anti-war march in San Francisco on March 19th, people will be gathering at Dolores Park at 11 a.m., marching to Civic Center for a rally at 1 p.m., so it'll be a typical route. A lot of different contingents. I know there's a labor contingent that will be meeting over at, I believe, 16th and Valencia or something like that, and they'll be going over to Mission High School. I've got something up here on the Indie Bay website. There's going to be an anarchist contingent on March 19th, so another constituency that is is looking beyond the typical reformist strategies in their own way. Peace rallies don't stop wars. Anarchist action. Organizing meeting for anarchist contingent during the March 19th days of action. Let's see what we've got. Sunday, looks like that happened. This was Sunday, February 27th at 1 to 2:30 p.m. I'm trying to look down here and see if they have a gathering point. They don't, but they say this is not a call out or organizing effort for a breakaway march, black bloc, or any other similar tactical formation. For obvious reasons, no discussion about such topics. So they're going to do their own thing. And
we also want to invite people, if they're interested in marching with Radical Women and our sister organization, the Freedom Socialist Party. We'll be meeting at our offices at 1908 Mission Street, which is at the corner of 15th and Mission, at 10 a.m. on Saturday. We'll have little pastries and coffee for people to get us going in the morning. And anyway, it's if you people want to march with the revolutionary feminists, people are welcome to do so. And we hope you do.
Okay, great. Don't starve our cities to feed the war machine. Bring the troops home now. Bring the troops home now is the prime message of this demonstration. No dismantling of public education. Stop the destruction of health care, affordable housing for all. Hands off Social Security. Stop attacks on civil rights and civil liberties. Announce your March 12th action so that people can go away with some clear information on that.
Yes, I'd be happy to. This is International Women's Day celebration on Saturday, March 12th. It's at 7:30 p.m. The event, again, is solidarity with our Iraqi sisters, and the celebration features Huda Samir of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq. She's their U.S. rep, and Nancy Reiko-Kato speaking for Radical Women and as a anti-war and labor activist. We'll be having a wonderful Middle Eastern buffet with vegan options, as well as options for all other sorts of appetites. That's served at 6 p.m. It's all going to be homemade and delicious. That's an $8.50 donation, and we're having a $3 to $5 door donation for the event itself at 7:30. We do offer work exchanges, and the event will be held at New Valencia Hall. Again, the address there is 1908 Mission Street. It's at 15th, right near 16th Street BART, and on the number 14 Muni line. And Bay Area Radical Men is proud to be sponsoring this event. We welcome everyone to come, both to hear what's happening firsthand from the group that we mentioned, who's one of the feminist outspoken organizations in Iraq, as well as to say, what can we do here at home? If you have any questions or want to get involved to help us volunteer on the night of or in any other way, please call 415-864-1278. That's 864-1278, or email rwbayarea@yahoo.com.
Okay, great. This is Rad Radio, and my guests have been Tony Mendocino and Nancy Reiko Cotto from Radical Women in San Francisco. Any closing words before we move on?
Just a thank you again for having us. And on March 8th, around the world, is people will be celebrating the militant resistance of working class women on actual International Women's Day. So we hope that that will be another aspect of trying to build solidarity with women in Iraq and everywhere where there's oppression. So thanks for having us on the show.
Okay, thank you. Let's get a few new songs from La Tigre's latest album.
Blacksburg,
Okay, two songs from Le Tigre. For those of you who don't know, Le Tigre is a band out of New York City. The lead singer there, Kathleen Hanna, was a member of the groundbreaking band Bikini Kill, and now Le Tigre has been mixing punk rock with dance songs, mixing feminism with activism. That first one was a great one. I love that one. Compilation of a lot of activist chants there. That was called New Kicks, and the last one was titled 16. That was from their late 2004 release, This Island. Back to the March 19th protest. There's going to be a major regional protest in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I've got an announcement from United for Peace and Justice, one of the larger groups that's organizing these protests in New York City, probably all around the country. UFPJ is also supporting a major regional demonstration in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We hope those of you within driving distance to Fayetteville will make this action your priority. Fayetteville is home to Fort Bragg, ground zero for the 82nd Airborne Division and many of the Army's elite units. Beyond Fort Bragg, North Carolina hosts four other of the nation's largest military bases, making the state one of the friendliest to the military-industrial complex. Less well-known is the fact that Fayetteville is also home to a growing base of anti-war activists and organizations. They are military folks, veterans, families of active duty soldiers and veterans, students, workers, housewives, clergy, educators, and all are part of a vibrant and growing statewide network. They stand firm in the knowledge that organizing in Fayetteville is a key to bringing the troops home from Iraq. Military families speak out, bring them home now, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Veterans for Peace, Quaker House, Fayetteville Peace with Justice, the North Carolina Peace and Justice Coalition, and North Carolina Council of Churches are spearheading the Fayetteville action. Please do all you can to be in Fayetteville. So yet another contingent, something again that's below the radar screen of the media. But again, the second anniversary of the war, we say no to war worldwide. $80 billion more for war by United for Peace and Justice. This was January 28th, a little bit dated. I'm not sure exactly where this is politically. George W. Bush is asking Congress for $80 billion more for the failed Iraq war. Congress is gearing up to pour more money to, quote-unquote, stay the course of the past two tragic years. Tell your member of Congress that not one more dime should go to waging war in Iraq. Instead, the U.S. must end the occupation, bring our troops home, and support Iraqi sovereignty. The president's fourth, quote-unquote, supplemental spending request for the Iraq war will add $80 billion to the more than $151 billion already appropriated. It is time for us to demand that the administration and Congress stop perpetuating the cycle of violence in Iraq, stop sending so many soldiers and civilians to their graves, and stop diverting precious resources that could be used to rebuild Iraq and fund critical domestic needs. Deaths in Iraq since March 2003. This is off the IndieBay.org website. U.S. 1,510 Iraqi civilians, 100,000 plus estimated, with 16,069 to 18,339 verified. Cost of the war in Iraq, I don't know what this number is. It sounds like it's saying $163,602,899,000, and the dollars are rolling as we speak on this graphic. U.S. soldiers wounded in Iraq, an estimated 25,000. So really just a miserable situation. Let's go back to two more songs from Le Tigre off of their new album, This Island. Let's start out with the title track, This Island.
You must not love to hate, you must not take the bait, and learn to hit delete. You'd say the same thing to me, runs high, and the war's on, and it's last call. Even your friends look worried, your friends think you're smart, they think you're super fun, but it's high time, I need a tight tight, look at a fine line inside. Stop smoking those cigarettes, baby, next time it's your turn to save me, put some water on your little face, cause you're a man.
have never seen. She comes up, dances on me. I look into her eyes. I say,
hey, you're not a dyke.
That was Viz, and before that, This Island from Le Tigre. Let's go out with a five-minute news piece on a statewide highway anti-war demo.
Anti-war groups in over 40 California coastal communities staged a synchronized rally Saturday along an 800-mile stretch of Highway 1 from the Oregon border all the way to San Diego. Despite intermittent rains and a moderate wind, 15 Santa Cruz residents stood for 2 hours on the Branca 40 overpass, facing the north and southbound lanes of Highway 1 traffic with their peace flags and banners. According to Louis LaFortune of the Santa Cruz Peace Coalition, the statewide highway action was simply about trying to bring attention to the anti-war message.
Well, we're trying to raise visibility. I mean, we're raising the issue, getting people to think about what's going on in Iraq, with our dollars in our name.
In February 2003, in excess of 10 million people globally were in the streets protesting as the U.S. military was preparing to invade Iraq. While that didn't prevent the war, Anne Simonton of Women in Black says there's been valuable lessons learned.
What we've learned, basically, is that we have to continue. It's what we have to do, and we have to continue on every level. And so I was really happy to hear that they were organizing this one up and down the coast of Highway 1. These are the kinds of things that communities can get involved in across the country. And so we hope to inspire other communities in other states.
Jean Houston, also of Women in Black, held a sign in the wet weather to show others her opposition to the policies of war abroad and at home.
People have got to wake up and see what's going on in the world today. What's going on in America today? You know, we're losing our rights. I'm Japanese American. I was put in a concentration camp during the war. I know what can happen when these rights are usurped.
You guys, do me a favor and don't post any signs up. You guys can hold them all you want. Just don't hang any signs from here.
Okay.
A total of four Santa Cruz police and two CHP officers showed up to ensure the protesters were in compliance with traffic laws.
Yeah. We're getting a good response too.
Yes, you can't attach it to a freeway overpass or any gates designed to protect for your protection and for the traffic below as well. Okay?
Near the end of the rally, and after several attempts to find a code violation, the officers determined the group was acting in accordance with their First Amendment rights.
This is a dog tag to commemorate my brother, Lance Corporal Joseph Boyd Spence. He died in the helicopter crash on the 26th of January.
Roger Spence came from Scotts Valley, not to cause trouble, he says, but to voice his frustration with the protesters' choice of venue to stage their rally.
So I'm just trying to say there's a better place to do this than a rainy freeway.
No, there's, well, there's
this
certainly
is. Because we have people's attention.
Spence says the Iraq War was misconceived, but points to the recent elections there as proof the invasion was worth the costs.
I think if you ask any one of those Iraqis that was allowed to vote, they would say it was worth it. And I think that since the right thing was done, it was worth it, yeah. Every Marine over there that died signed a contract saying that he very well may have to lay down his life. That's what Marines do. That's what my brother did. He knew he could have died.
A Santa Cruz resident named Rebecca doesn't protest much, but says she is sick of how the U.S. bullies other countries in the name of democracy.
The American casualties are sad. It's you know, sons and daughters, brothers and sisters of people across the country, and that's terrible. We're also inflicting that type of violence on other people, particularly in Iraq, but in Afghanistan and all over the world. And I think that it's not done for an ideologically good reason. It's done for power and it's done for money. And I think it's obscene and it needs to stop.
Peace Coalition member Louis LaFortune supports a complete and immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq and calls the invasion illegitimate.
They're there illegally. The whole war was illegal. The occupation is illegal. The troops are being put in harm's way for the interest, for the profits of corporate America. Yeah, I would advocate bringing them home now. You know, the military brags that they can put a division on the ground anywhere in the world in 6 weeks. Well, then they can bring them home in 6 weeks.
Despite the poor weather and low turnout, Ann Simonton from Women in Black was pleased with the impact the group made.
I think that any time any individual stands up, holds a sign, and says that they are for peace is a very positive step.
Local peace activists have decided to move their weekly vigil to the Branca 40 overpass and will meet there each Friday at 5 p.m. for similar demonstrations. Reporting in